So we're on Daf Kuf Lamed Tes Amid Beis, and we're up to Amar Rav Ovin, which is approximately six, seven lines down from the top.
Okay.
And we're talking about something called a kila, which is a canopy. So we'll, if we get ahead to make this canopy, we'll save it for July 25th. Am I right? Okay. July 5th, is it?
5, yeah.
Oh, July 5, sorry. Oh, it's really around the corner. Okay. Amar Rabbi Ovin bar Rav Huna Amar Rav Chama bar Gurya Mis'atef Adam Bekila Ubekaseha V'yotze B'rishus Rabim B'Shabbos V'eino Choshesh. So this kila is made up of a sadin, which is kind of like a sheet, and that sadin is used leprisa to spread it out on top of this ohel to use it as a bed canopy, a canopy over a bed. And the Gemara now wants to know if you're allowed to dress up, wrap yourself in this sheet, and to walk out from Rishus HaYochanan into Rishus HaRabim, and is it called Derech Malbush? And Rav Ovin says, you're allowed to do that, you can wrap it around yourself, and that's called Derech Malbush. V'yotze Rishus HaRabim Eino Choshesh. She doesn't have to worry about the Isur Otsah. And this, despite the fact that he has kaskaseha, which he calls ritzuos hatluyos ba. There are various straps that are attached to this cloak, because when you drape it over the canopy, you use these straps in order to move, you know, the sheet in the right direction and tie it up around the poles, whatever is holding up the canopy. And even though these ritzuos are sort of just there in order to function as part of the ohel, you know, this tent called the canopy, and they have nothing to do with the wrapping around your body, it's only there to tighten, you know, the canopy on top of the various pegs that it, or poles that it hangs on. But nevertheless, you and I might have thought that this is considered a masa, that he's carrying these ritzuos, and perhaps even if you would say that he's not carrying them, then it might be something which is mukta, because you can't create, you're not allowed to create an oil on Shabbos. So now, since this canopy has these straps and it really looks like an oil, or it's designated to create an oil, that's what it's designed for, it might be considered something that's also betiltul, and the chiddush is no, that it's mutter. So the Gemara is not exactly sure why this should be mutter. Maishno, how is it different? Mid Rav Huna, the Yom Rav Huna, Marav Hayotze Lishus Harabin. He goes out into a public area. Betalis she'ena mitzuyetzes kihil chasa. So he's got fringes on the four sides of his talis, but they weren't tied on according to the law. But perhaps he only has three tzitzis on three sides, three corners of his beged. He's chayv chatas, meaning that any kind of fringes on a garment, on a cloak, if they don't have the status of a chefta shel mitzvah as far as tzitzis is concerned, then mimela it's called a masa. And you're not allowed to go out into Rosh Hashanah with this garment that has the fringes attached. And the same logic should apply by analogy to this kila, which is a sheet that he's wearing with the straps attached. And that sheet is designated for a kila to work as a canopy. And this is not Derech Malbush. This is like the case of the fringes on the tzitzis. They don't add anything to your body. They don't protect your body. And they don't have any function as a malbush. So the Gemara now has to differentiate between chutei atzitzis and ritzuos of a kilo. Tzitzis, legabi talis, chashivi velo botli. He could have added a fourth fringe on the fourth side. So he needs the first three. And he's three quarters of the way towards his goal of creating a talis with tzitzis. So therefore the fringes are very important and they don't lose their status. They're not batel. However, in the case of kila, hani, these ritzuos in a kila case, lo chashivi, they have no significance in and of themselves. They're only significant if you want to use this sadin, this sheet, as a canopy. But if he's not using it as a canopy, then right now he couldn't care less about these straps that are there. They're not functioning in that capacity, and therefore they're batel. They have no status whatsoever. And Mimela, he's not considered carrying them. Now, the Chachamim hold back in the Mishnah at the beginning of this chapter that you're not allowed to take a misanenet, a sieve, and stretch it out over the mouth of a utensil. In that case, they were talking about yontif, because it looks like he's creating an ohel. He's taking a reshet, like a, it's almost like a small the word is escaping my mind. You know what a reshet is, like when you want to keep the mosquitoes out. What is it called that you put up on a net, kind of like a net. So that he uses this like a net to cover up a utensil.
Right.
And then he pours the wine in. The wine is mixed with sediments, and the sediments float to the top. And he's not allowed to stretch it out. Now, if he stretched it out on Erev Yontif, and now he's pouring the wine in on Yontif itself, that's okay. That's mutter. Why? Because it's what's called Litzarech Ochel Nefesh. It's for the purpose of food. But to allow him to stretch it over the kli on Yontif, that we don't do, because that's creating an ohel. Omar Rabba Barafuna Marim Adom Ala Mishameres B'Yontif Litlos Barimonim V'Tole Bashmarim. So Marim is a harama. I think in English they call it a subterfuge, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
And what he does is, he's saying that, you know, when he stretches this net, or whatever you call it, over the mouth of a utensil, he's doing it in order to create a receptacle to hold up his pomegranates, meaning he's not interested at all in using it as a sieve. So he claims, but that's not really the truth. But Tola Bashmarim, he's actually going to use it as a misanenet, and he's going to pour in the wine so that the sediments float on top. And he's allowed to do this so-called harama. And why is that? He says the following, that in general, we don't want to do on Shabbos those actions that are typical of chol, of something that you would do in the weekday. And that's called uvdin dechol. So at this point, the Gemara is rejecting the association of stretching this net over the utensil, over the mouth of the utensil, as ohel, and instead the issue is uvdin dechol. Now, what makes it an uvdin dechol? The fact that during the week, when he wants to perfect his wine and remove the sediments, this is how he sets up his kli, so he can use it as a sifter. Here, since he's not using it as a sifter, he's doing it in order to hold up his rimonim, his pomegranates, then it's no longer uvdin dechol. That's not something that he would usually do during the week. It's not associated in any way with a maisa chol. And therefore, he says the following. Once he's allowed to set up this sifter, and he's doing it ke'ilu, as if he's doing it for the sake of rimonim, then now it becomes melechas ochel nefesh for him to use this sifter to pour the wine in. Omer Rav Ashi, Rav Ashi wants to limit and restrict the scope of this permissible harama. Who did tola barimonim? He's got to at least pay lip service and put some pomegranates on top of it and demonstrate that he stretched this reshet, this net over the kli in order to indeed hold up his pomegranates, not for the purpose of holding up the sediments. Once he does it that way, and he actually puts some rimonim on top, now he has a carte blanche. You know, now we're going to give him permission to use it as a misanenet for his wine. But if he doesn't first put the pomegranates on top, then even though he made a declaration, you know, I hereby am doing this for the sake of my rimonim, he's not allowed to use that to be mishamer his yayin. His shmarim. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. Rav Ashi contradicts a brisa which is quoted in Masechta Moed Katan. Maishna mehadusanya matilim sheichar b'moed litzorach ha-moed aval shalol litzorach ha-moed asur. That the Mishnah in Moed Katan, when it talks about Chol HaMoed, that's what the subject of Masechta Moed Katan is, then he's allowed to prepare beer on Chol HaMoed, but only that which he needs for the Moed. But Shalol HaTzorach HaMoed is also. Why? Because you're doing a Malach on Chol HaMoed, which you don't need on the Moed. Echad Sheichar, Tmarin, V'Echad Sheichar, Siorim, right? There are two types of beer. There's beer that you can make from barley. That's the familiar beer that we know of, from hops. And then there's beer that's made from dates. And afal pi sheyesh lehem yashan, even though he has old wine, which he has stored in his, you know, storage house, and he could drink it during the day of Yontif. Nevertheless, Marim, he's allowed to do a subterfuge, and he's allowed to prepare this barley for dates for beer. He's allowed to manufacture the beer on Yontif. Vishose min achadash. So what kind of harama does he do here? He adds a major volume of beer, which he cooks or whatever he does to prepare it, way beyond what he needs during the Moed. And what he does is, he's allowed to drink from the new beer. And it doesn't seem like there are any conditions attached over here. His harama is permissible, even though he doesn't demonstrate in any way. In other words, the Brisa doesn't say, well, you know, first he has to drink from the old wine, and then he could, Kilu, use up the old wine and then create new wine. I don't mean wine, I mean beer. So it seems like there's a carte blanche heter to drink the new beer, even though he hasn't demonstrated that he's not doing any sort of prohibition. He has an ample supply of old beer. What he's doing today is not litzorech hamoed. And he just made a declaration, you know, that he's going to need this new beer. So the Gemara answers, Hasam lo mucha milsa hacha mucha milsa. In the case of preparing the beer, even when he adds the hops into the water or whatever combination he makes in order to create beer, we don't know that he's doing something that's prohibited. The spectator, if he will judge him favorably, he doesn't know that this person has a supply in his storehouse of old beer. He thinks he has no beer. And the reason why he's preparing this beer is because he needs it for Yontif. But here, in the case of putting the top part, the sifter, on top of the kli, and then he goes ahead and he pours the wine, then it's mucha milsa. It seems that stam means, in general, when a person puts a sieve on top of a kli, what's he doing that for? He's not doing it for pomegranates. You know, he's got plenty of bowls where he can serve his pomegranates in. So, unless we know otherwise, we have every reason to assume that he's doing exactly what he does during the week in order to sift out the sediments from the wine. And that's called mucha milsa. It looks like he's doing something that's awesome. So therefore he has to go out of his way, says Ravashi, to do an action to demonstrate that no, he's doing it for the sake of Rimonim. Once it's already up and it's set, then he's going to use it to be Meshamer, his wine. Now, how far does Harama go? Under what circumstances does Halacha bend the rules and say, well, you know what? Make believe it's this, you know, we're beheta, when you're really not honestly serious about that. Omule Rabbanu Ravashi. Chazi Mar. Hai Tzurmim Rabbanon. Take a look at this particular scholar for Rav Huna Barav Chiyun Shmei. His name is Rav Huna Amri. Others say Rav Huna Brei Chalvon Shmei. The Shakal Bra de Tuma. He took shum, which is garlic, and I guess they used to store it in something that looked like a little tooth, some sort of small container. So he's got shum, umanech bebarza didona, and he puts it in a place where he has a barrel with a hole in it, and he's allowed to use it to stuff up the hole, to clog up the hole. And why is he doing it this way? Shelo yitonef yeno. In order to prevent his wine from getting filthy. And this looks like he's being metakein, he's really fixing up a kli. V'yomar, and he makes a declaration, Latznuei komachavin. I'm not really trying to plug up the hole of the barrel. I'm just looking for a place to keep my garlic, my piece of garlic over here. So I'm hiding it there, you know, in the in that crevice or hole in the barrel. And the barrel is automatically, so to speak, clogged up. So we see clearly that the harama exercise is permissible, even in a case where, let's be honest about it, he's using this shum, this garlic, to plug up the hole of his barrel. So let's just summarize this last piece of Gemara. He says, he took garlic, a clove of garlic, he placed it in a spigot of a barrel, and he made the declaration, I intended to put it away, to hide it. I have no intention to plug up the barrel, or the spigot of the barrel. And plugging up a hole to stop the leakage is forbidden on Shabbos because of tikkun mana. We don't fix up a vessel. Now, would this be a violation of a doraisa? So here's where we have the Ritva, who insists that even though his true intention is to fix up the barrel, nevertheless, he would not be violating a melachat doraisa of tikkun mana. And if he would have been, then we wouldn't have allowed harama. We only allow harama because there's no, in the worst case scenario, there's no violation of a doraisa. Why is this so? So the Ritva offers two explanations. First, he says that it was loose. It didn't become a permanent part of the barrel. And tikkun mana is when you change the essence of a kli in a way that's permanent, the way that's fixed, in a way that is tight and not loose. Number two, he says that, generally speaking, a clove of garlic is not used to fix up a barrel. That's not the normal way you would plug up a barrel, and therefore comes under kalach haryat. However, let's say you would take a wooden plug, a piece of wood, and you would plug up the hole of the barrel, that would be a possibility of a doraisa, of tikkun mana, and he would not be allowed to do it based on harama and say, well, I'm only doing it because I'm looking for a place to hide my, piece of wood. Ozil v'noyim b'mabra. Okay, here's another story of a harama on Shabbos, also about the same Rav Huna. He would go and sleep in a non-Jewish boat, a boat that's owned by a non-Jew, which is tied up on shore, and it's about to embark over the river, and avar lahach gisa, and travel from one side of the river to the other side of the river. V'sayir peri, and he's meshamer peros karmo. He wants to take a look at his vineyard and check out to make sure that everything is growing properly on the other side of the river. So he's really traveling over the sea. V'yomar, but he makes a declaration, Ana lemenam kamachavne. I just need a place to sleep. I was resting on the boat. Kilu, I didn't know that the boat was going to take off, which is all, that's just a fig leaf. He really knows that the guy is going to take him across the river on Shabbos. And he says the following. The Chachamim told these two stories about Rav Huna to Rav Ashi, thinking that Rav Ashi would make a protest. They thought that for sure Rav Ashi is going to object to Haroma. He's not going to accept Haroma. So to their surprise, Omar Lahu, Rav Ashi responded to the Talmidei Chachamim in the Beis Medrash. Haroma ka'amris? You want to complain against him because he's doing a subterfuge and it's not honest? Haroma b'derabanan hi. When the Iser itself, even had it been done, straight away, would in the worst case scenario be a violation of a derabanan. So that, for example, even if he would have plugged up the chavis with a clove for the purpose of plugging it up, that's not tikkun mana doraisa, it's only derabanan. And traveling across the river is not a malacha doraisa, it's only derabanan. Is then, since the pu'ula, the action, even without harama, in the worst case, would be an isur derabanan, therefore we're not going to be machmir, and we're going to allow harama, And we're not going to say, well, you know, if we allow him to do this harama this time, next time maybe he'll do it directly and he'll violate an Isur Drabanan. He'll do it in the regular way without harama. You don't have to worry about someone of the caliber of Rav Huna that we should prohibit this because next time he's going to do it without harama. Now, la halacha, it's very interesting because who would be able to rely on harama today? I mean, do we have a person who fits this category of a Tsumim Rabbanon? However, many of the poskim say that this is mutter for every person, not just the Talmud Chacham. Although it's true, when Rav Ashi gave his response, he couched it in terms of a great Talmud Chacham, but it would apply to any person. So a subterfuge may be employed, I'm reading the English here, only where one would have committed a rabbinic prohibition had he not employed the subterfuge. It cannot be employed where otherwise it would be a violation of a biblical prohibition. Even so, only a Torah scholar can be trusted in this case. Okay. And this leads us to the next Mishnah, which is about two-thirds of the way down on Kufla Mites Amid Beis. The Mishnah is going to enumerate certain actions that are similar to Borer, and yet you're allowed to do them on Shabbos. Nosnim Mayim Al Gabi Shmarim, you have sediments of wine, and they are sitting on top of a sieve. So the good wine is on the bottom. That's already been sifted on Erev Shabbos. Now you're left with shmarim, which are on top. And now you're pouring wine over the sediments. He calls it dregs. Okay, fine. I call it sediments. I think that's a more edel way of saying it. Anyway. And what's his purpose? Bishvil sheitzolu. What does that mean, bishvil sheitzolu? Kideshi is tadanu, v'yozev men yayin shadayin balua b'hem. In other words, even after he has sifted the sediments and the real pure wine is on the bottom, but nevertheless the sediments themselves are still absorbed with wine. There's still some amount of wine which is absorbed in the sediments. And he's going to be able to get that wine out by pouring the water over the sediments. And you and I would have said, well, this looks like borer. But the answer is, it's not borer. Borer means when you take psoles and you separate it. Here, he's not separating, he's just soaking it. And as a result of the soaking it, he's going to have a little extra wine that he's going to be able to sort of squeeze out from the sediments. He says here that dregs that are left in a wine strainer from straining that was done before Shabbos certainly contain some residue of wine. This residue can be extracted by pouring water over the dregs. The wine water mixture then drains of its own from the solid dregs. Okay. Now, the Achronim say that it could be that this case in the Mishnah is some sort of a soaking situation in which he's soaking the dregs in water. And honestly, I understand that a lot better because if he's pouring the water over the sediments, I think we're getting too close to borer. You know, if he's soaking them, that's okay. Next, misadanim es hayayin bisudarim. We're talking about kemach, and this flower, Shebo, it's called Psoles levona anigremes al yidei ipush yayin. So after the wine becomes a little bit sour over the course of time, then he's allowed to put the wine into a strainer, or at least into a sudar. A sudar is some sort of a cloth, and he's going to be able to extract something called a kemach. Now, what exactly is this kemach? He says, filtering wine through cloths, he eliminates from the wine some sort of a fungus-like mold which can collect in the wine. As we said before, the wine has ipush, spoilage. Okay, now, we're going to set up three different categories as far as wine is concerned. He says the following. The least pure wine contains lees, L-E-E-S. And that's a wine that's undrinkable. The second level is wine that has a certain amount of sediments, but it still could be drinkable, what we call b'shas adchak, if he has no choice. Generally speaking, he would filter it out because of the sediments before he drinks it. And then you have the perfect level of wine, which is clear and pure wine, and it's already been filtered. Now, which category of these three categories is our Mishnah addressing? Clearly not the third category, because otherwise, why is he putting it through the sifter? Obviously, he's trying to get rid of those molds. So it's not the perfect wine. Is it, on the other hand, wine which is totally undrinkable, which is in the least pure state, and now he's making it drinkable? Or is it in that middle category where he could drink it if need be? So the Ritva says that in the middle category, you're allowed to filter the wine with a strainer, because since we're only dealing with an iser borer derabanan, in a case of something that's drinkable b'shas adchak, if need be, without straining, and now he's using a cloth to strain the wine. That's not the normal way you would strain it. So he's not using a kli hamiyuchad lakach, a kli that's designated explicitly, singled out for the purpose of straining. Now the Mishnah says, ubikfifa mitzris, which is called a sal, a basket, hasui minitre dekel. So they take leaves from a date tree and they weave it together to form a basket, a kfifa, otherwise known as a traskal, and they use this kind of a kfifa mitzris in order to filter the wine. And again, according to the Ritva, we're talking about second stage wine, if you know what I mean, that could theoretically be drinkable, and he's doing it in a very unusual way. This is not a sieve that was dedicated for this purpose. So you can pour the wine in and do the same thing that we would do with a sifter. This we're allowed to do either with a cloth or with this kind of palm twig basket. Then the Mishnah says, Nosnim beitzah b'misanenes shel chardol. Okay, now, they had a sifter which they used, or a strainer maybe is a better word, I don't know, that they used for mustard seeds, and they already sifted the seeds on Erev Shabbos, and now he wants to put an egg on Shabbos in order to separate the white of the egg from the yellow of the egg. Okay, then? And he says the following, that you have a raw egg and you crack it over the strainer, and mustard has already been strained on Erev Shabbos. And we'll see why that why that's significant. And he's adding what we call the yolk of the egg to the mustard, and apparently it adds color, and the yolk is apparently thinner, and it would drain through the strainer, and it would color the mustard as it passed through, whereas the egg white would remain above. I never understood this. I always thought the yellow of the egg is thicker than the white of the egg, but okay, fine. And the Gemara is going to have an analysis as to why this is only Durabanan, and you're allowed to do it in this unusual way. So in the Hebrew, he says the following: Mutar litein beitza betoch mesanenes shenosam b'achar dol b'erev Shabbos kidei shachelmon, which is the yellow part of the egg, yered emachar dal v'yitzbeenu, and it'll color it. V'af shachelmon yored lemata emachar dal v'achelbon shu'av. The white of the egg is thicker. Nishar lemala, it stays above. Ein bazeh iser borer. That's not called borer. Okay, fine. This is not called borer. We have to know why. It has something to do with the fact, apparently, that he's coloring the mustard seeds. Now we have another din. Osin anumlin, some sort of a drink, b'Shabbos, and you could make it as much as you want. No limitations. Normally, we have a tircha max. We don't want you to do too much work on Shabbos. But here, in this case, they allowed as much as you want of this anumlin. What is this anumlin? All we know so far is that it's some sort of a drink, a beverage. And there's quite a bit of work involved in mixing it together. But it's permissible on Shabbos, and we'll see why. Rav Yehuda Omer, Bekos, B'Shabbos Bekos, B'Yontif B'Lugin. Then on Shabbos, we're going to have a very limited permission in terms of preparing this anomlin, and we're only going to allow you to fill it into a cup, whatever you can put into a cup, not beyond that. That's tircha, that's too much work. On Yontif, however, we're going to allow it in a much larger vessel, a receptacle which is called lugin, otherwise known as a kad, which is not a cup but a jar, or even perhaps you can call it a bottle. And apparently the reason why we're more flexible and relaxed on Yontif is because of the heter of Ochel Nefesh. Meaning on Yontif, even if you don't need all that much, maybe some guests will come in and you want to serve them this anomlin. Ube Moed, on Chol HaMoed, we're going to go even further than this. Not only is a jug allowed, or let's call it a bottle, but even a chavis, even a barrel is allowed on Chol HaMoed. So Chol HaMoed doesn't have really this. So we're going from one Madrig of Kedusha to the next, and all the way to the bottom. So we have the Kedusha of Shabbos, a very limited heter for Tircha. We expand that for Yontif, and no limits, kimat, no limits at all in the case of Chol HaMoed. Rav Tzadok Omer, however, Kol Fi Archim. Who are you fooling? Are you expecting guests, or are you not expecting guests? You know, how many people are going to show up? 120 or only 80? Right? So he says, if you're expecting guests, you're allowed to make as much as you need for your guests of this anomlin. And even on Shabbos, he's making on Shabbos. But on the other hand, with regard to Yontif, he seems to be more machmir. If he only has a small amount of guests, then he should make a small amount, and it seems even on Chol HaMoed he should be making a limited amount based on the guests. Okay. Now, in the footnote here, he quotes a Mishnah Brura who says that Mashi Tiru, this heter, to make a nomlin, Hainu La'arbavan bin Nachas, to mix together whatever he needs, the ingredients here, and but asur litrov ula arbev bekoach. You know, to use a real beater that requires extra effort, that's called tirchi yisera, and we pay professionals for that. It's umnis gedola, and that we're not allowed to do. That's the chiddush of the Mishnah Berurah. The Gemara says the following: Omar Zeira, no sein adam yayin solul. We're talking about pure wine. Umayim tzlulim and clear water l'toch hamishameres b'Shabbos. So you pour the wine and the water through a strainer on Shabbos. V'eino choshesh. It's not called borer. He doesn't have to worry about borer. And the reason for that is that both the wine and the water are ru'uyim lishtos. That even without the sinun process, you would be able to drink the water or the wine. And here I would interject about filters. You know, the question of how to use filtered water on Shabbos, it comes from a filter. Well, it all depends on whether it's drinkable without the filter. You know, it's very nice that you want to drink filtered water, but if you don't have filtered water, at least in certain parts of the world, you will drink water that's not filtered. But let's say there, you know, maybe you're in a country where, you know, they tell you don't drink unfiltered water, you know.
Right.
Aval achurim. However, this heter of straining does not apply to liquids that are mixed with different kinds of sediments. That's already borer, because those kinds of murky substances will remain on the top of the strainer. And then you're taking psoles from ochel, and that constitutes a violation of borer. Can you still hear me? Beisve. So Ze'iri just said that we have a heter that is limited to the case of clear wine and water. But in the case of murky wine, that's called borer when you put it into a strain of mesve. Rav Shimon Gamliel, Omer, Tored, Odom, Chavish, Shal Yayin, Yena, Ushmara, Vinosein, Lesocham, Shameres, Beshabbos, Veino, Choshesh. So you're talking about stirring up a barrel of wine, mixing together the wine together with the shmarim, with the sediments. And then he puts it into a strainer on Shabbos, and eino choshesh, meaning there's no violation of an isur borer. So we see that even though we're talking about, I guess, low-grade wine, not that middle grade that we spoke about, but wine that really needs to be filtered, nevertheless, it's permissible. Whereas Ze'iri took the position that achurim lo, because once it's achurim, then it's considered borer. So how do we reconcile this brice of Rav Shimon Gamliel with Ze'iri? So the Gemara says, Tirgama Ze'iri reinterpreted Rav Shimon Gamliel, Bein Hagitos Shanu. So what's Bein Hagitos Shanu? So let me read to you the Hebrew translation. He says, Rav Shimon Gamliel is talking about a case of tkufas, drichas, anovim, begas. So there are different seasons during the year. And during certain seasons, all the wine is what we call achurim. And instead of paying an exorbitant amount of money in the shuk to get clear wine, people are very satisfied and they're willing to settle for this, shall we say, grade B wine of Yainos Achurim. So they drink it together with the Shmarim. And during that period of time, which is called Bein Hagitos, you're allowed to strain the wine, because you would drink the wine, even if need be, even without removing, you know, all these murky mixtures. So Shosin Osam B'mishmarehem. And therefore, Enkan Tikkun, it's not called Borer. However, the rest of the year, when it's not during this period of Drichas Anovim Begas, when they take the wine and they press it in the wine presses, then people only drink clear wine, not murky wine. And in that case, it would be prohibited on Shabbos to do this sinun, because people are very particular at that time of the year, and they will only drink strained wine. And he has here a note. He says that Haramam Kosa Perkhes Mil Khashavish calls Mancha Yayin Toses Adain Lo Nifridu Ashmarme Ayayin Yofa Yofa. He says that during a certain period of time the wine is still in a state of being toses. It means that it still has the shmarim that are mixed up with the wine. And in the English he has a footnote in which he writes that unlike wine drunk away from the press, freshly pressed wine is drunk amongst the wine presses, and it's drunk in its unfiltered state. Therefore, filtering is not borer. Okay, so that's what we have here. I have a long note here based on a Mishnah at the beginning of this perek that says that Osur Liten Yayin L'Mishmeres B'Shabbos. And we're going to have to assume that that's during the rest of the year. It's not during the Bein Agitos period of time. Now the Mishnah says, Misananim es hayayin besudorim. We said that it's very unusual to use a piece of cloth as a filter, and therefore we're permitting him to filter his wine through a cloth. Omar Rav Shimi bar Chiya, ubilvad shelo yase guma. That this permissibility is limited, is conditional on the fact that he doesn't make a hollow in the cloth. What's the problem with making a hollow in the cloth? He says that makes it into a base kibul liyayin. That sometimes the cloth itself could be used as a receptacle. And in such a case, this is a kind of tikkun mana. I would assume that it means that by making this sheka, this guma, then he forms a hollow and it directs the flow of the wine into the center of the container. And this is called uvda dechol. It appears as though he's performing a form of borer. Or perhaps we're not so concerned about borer, but rather he might come to take the cloth and wring it, which is chita, of the wine that's gathered in that part of the cloth. So therefore what he has to do is he's got to place the cloth flat over the mouth of the container, and then it doesn't appear to be straining since the wine does not gather in the center of the cloth. So again, this hollow that forms in the cloth directs the wine into the center, and that becomes similar to borer. Ubekfifa mitzris, we said you're allowed to take this basket that was made of palm leaves and use it as a misanenet to filter his wine. Amar Abchia Barashi Amar Rav Ubilvad Shelo Yagbia Mikarka Osav Shel Kli. That he's not allowed to raise this basket above the bottom, the floor, so to speak, of the utensil tefach. And in the Hebrew translation, he says here, "Im yesh chalal tefach." In other words, if the bottom of the basket rises a tefach above the floor of the container, then he says that yesh chalal tefach ben shulei akfifa lekarkis hakli hareza oel aroy she'osel asoso b'shabbos. So if the bottom of the basket rises above the floor of the container, so you have the basket that's being used as a sifter, as a sieve, to strain the wine, and underneath it, the wine goes through this the holes of the basket, and it's collected in a container. And if he lifts up this basket over a tefach above the container, then it looks like he's making an oel, which might sound strange to our ears. You know, this is a little bit far away from an oel. First of all, it's only on a temporary basis, so that makes it an oel aroi. But we're always afraid when he makes an oel aroi that maybe he might come to make an oel keva. But honestly, to me, it's a real stretch to say that this is an oel just because the basket is a tefach above, you know, it becomes like a roof, so to speak, above the container into which the wine is draining. So let me just read this footnote to you. He says that this statement, which is attributed to Rav, is telling us that he's not allowed to leave a space of a tefach between the top kli, which in this case is the basket, and the container under that kli, which is the floor of the container that is one tefach below the basket. And that's the container that's collecting the wine that's draining into that container. He says that becomes a form of an ohel. And therefore, he has to be careful not to do so, even though he's filtering through cloths. Although, I don't know, a basket is not exactly a cloth, but at least for that purpose of oel, it's similar to a cloth. And it's similar to an oel. Now, Rav says something else. Hai prokna. Prokna, he says, is a beged sheshotchin oso al gabi gigis yayin kidei lechasoso. So it's a kind of a small cloth that they stretch out over a barrel of wine in order to close it. Apalge de kuva shari. If it covers only half of the opening of this barrel, that's permissible. Mishum she'ein zeh choshev oel. Oel has to completely cover it as a roof. But akule kuba, if he covers the entire barrel by putting this covering on top of it, then usur. He's not allowed to do so because he's making an ohel. You know, all these halachas are very relevant because, you know, we're constantly stretching things out over containers. And you really have to know, you know, under certain conditions, there might be a tefach and it might be similar to an ohel. Omar Rav Papa, lo nahadir inish tsinyasa befume de chuze de chavita. He says, lo yahadik odom bechazka, he shouldn't, stretch this out in a very tight way. And what is it? It's kashim viksamim. These are pieces of straw or pieces of wood that are usually used for fuel, and they're small chips of wood. And he's able to stretch them over the mouth of a barrel. Bipi kli chavis katan. He's got a small earthenware jug. And motziim bo yayin me'achavis. And he uses this small container, if you will, in order to remove the wine from a barrel. And in truth, he's only interested in removing the wine from the barrel. But what it looks like to the spectator is mishum de michsei kimishameres. It looks like he's straining the wine. So we have a wine barrel, and we have a jug that we use to take the wine out of the barrel. And he can filter the wine without the bother of using a separate strainer by simply packing the filled jug's mouth tightly with straw or the like, so that the wine would automatically filter when poured. For our papa says that we should not prepare a jug, even before Shabbos, for such use on Shabbos, because it looks like he is actually straining the wine. To Beirav Papa, the people in the household of Rav Papa, shafu, they would pour shikra's beer, mimana lemana, from one vessel to another, and that's how they would separate the dregs. So I guess just by pouring it out, shofchim shechar mikli lechavero, what they did was the psoles would remain in the bottom of one of the utensils, and when he poured it, the contents into another utensil, the dregs would stay behind. And this is what they did in the household of Rav Papa, and apparently they weren't worried about the dregs settling on the barrel, on the bottle of the on the bottom of the vessel, and this was apparently permissible because the dregs were not visible while the beer was being poured. Wow, we have another precondition for borer. You have to have a visibility. You have to see both the ochel and the psoles in front of you. So while you're pouring the beer in this particular case, you don't see the psoles because it's all the way on the bottom. And therefore it's not similar to borer. Amalei Rav Acha midifti l'ravina. Ha'ika nitzotzos. I don't understand how they were allowed to do this when there are tipos ktanos, there are small drippings, hametaftafos mi beina psoles, that somehow pour in between the psoles, kshakiluach posek. So as long as he is pouring, and the stream of yayin, or in this case shechar, is active, that's okay. However, once the stream of beer stops for a moment, then there are these small drops between the beer, the hein muchachos. I guess you can see them at that point. Once the stream stops, and you look and you see, wow, look what's inside the vessel. You have shechar with psoles in it. You've got these dregs here on the bottom, and therefore it should be at that point it should look like borer. So I understand why this is mutter while you're pouring, but you take a little bit of a break between one pour and another, and all of a sudden the dregs become visible. And then it becomes borer. He says, the last drops of beer when poured out from the vessel were mixed together in a visible dregs. Okay, he doesn't say it the way I said it, that, you know, he constantly takes a little bit of a break when he pours. There's one stream, another stream. He's worried about the last drops of beer that come from the vessel, and they are seriously mixed with dregs, and that becomes visible. That we were looking for visibility. So how could they allow this in the household of Rav Papa? How could he let it go by? So Ravina responds, Nitzotzos lebei Rav Papa lo chashivi. In other words, I guess in the house of Rav Papa, they didn't mind these dregs so much. And borer, I guess, it depends upon how much, as we said before, in the case of Sinun, right, we spoke about different levels of wine, and we spoke about Benagitos, and we even compared it to filtered water. In certain cases and in certain contexts, they couldn't care less about these tipos, these dregs. They didn't have any chashivas, meaning they weren't makpid to get rid of them. And therefore, even when the kiluach, you know, the pouring, the stream of beer would stop, and they got to the, you know, those parts of the beer where there were tipos that were mixed in with psoles, what they would do is, you know what? If the psoles was seriously visible, and hayumashlichin osan lechutz im hapsoles, that even though, if I read this correctly, even though it was visible, nevertheless, they would still continue pouring and it would go out from one vessel with the psolus inside of it, and they didn't care about that. So they weren't really sorting out the dregs. He says Rav Papa was a beer merchant, Rashi tells us. His household had no interest in those last few drops mixed with dregs, and they discarded them. Ah, so that's not the pshat that I understood here from the Masifta. In the Masifta, I understood that they would pour it together with the dregs. He's saying, no, just the opposite. That they were beer producers. They were manufacturers of beer. So, you know, when he got to the last part, which was full of dregs, they would just throw the whole thing out with the dregs. And therefore, there's no kpeda on separating it. In the footnote, he writes here, Omnomim lo yasekein. In other words, he's not going to throw out the wine at the end, the beer at the end of the bottom of the barrel when he's got mixtures of dregs in it. El yamshich laros esashechar. He's going to continue pouring the beer even when the psoles is, and these drops of psoles are visible. Then he says, Yochichu shehu borer. It looks like he's doing it in a way in which he's trying to get those dregs to stay behind in the vessel from which he's pouring, and that becomes osur. The Mishnah says, Nosnim beitza b'mesanenes shel chardol. You're allowed to put the yolk, the egg, in, on top of this mesanenes, which was used before on Erev Shabbos to sift the mustard seeds, and now you want to add the yellow that goes through the small holes of the mesanenet to give color to the mustard seeds. Tani Yaakov Karcha. Okay, so Yaakov Karcha is going to teach us, and now we're going to take a look at Daf Kuf Mem Amid Aleph. Lefishein Osin Osa El Legavan. Right, this is what eluded us when we learned the Mishnah. Why is this mutter when he's really separating the yellow from the white and he really wants the yellow to go down to mix with the mustards? And he says, no, this is not called borer because he's only interested in the color. He's not really interested in separating the egg. He just wants to color the mustard seeds. Klomar, afsha chelbon, nisha lamala, even though the white part of the egg stays above. The strainer, he says, Eino omed lachila, and he's not using that in this concoction, so he's not going to eat it. Hachelmon, on the other hand, the yolk of the egg is misariv imamachol v'omed lachila. That's mixing up with the mustard seeds, and he's going to eat. Emikomakom, nevertheless, Eino chashiv kiborer. It's not called borer because it's not psoles mitoch ochel. Why? Kevin sha'af hachelmon, shu misanen mitoch hachelbon, Eino bishvil achila. He says, if you're separating the white and the yolk because you want to eat the yolk and not the white, that would be a borer problem. That's called psoles mitoch ochel. He doesn't want to eat the white, he wants to eat the yellow. But here he's not really interested in eating the yellow. But rak deliapos mara chardol. He's only trying to beautify the color of the chardol. He's only using it for coloring purposes. And shneim chashuvim ochel. So he's not separating psoles from ochel. Okay, then, so we're now on the top of Daf Kuf Mem Amen Aleph. We're up to Itmar on the top line, and in Mitzvah Shem, we'll cover that tomorrow.